My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money, but are your bills accurate? Well, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help you. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. So to save, visit HealthLock.com today. That's HealthLock.com today.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Mark Moss Show, where we're always talking about the world through the lens of politics, finance, and technology. And of course, the decentralized revolution, how the world is starting to break apart. And I like to bring to you some interesting guests. You don't have to listen to me all the time. And that's what I have today. I have Marlo Oakes. He's the Utah State Treasurer. And we're going to dig into something big and a little bit scary. Marlo, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me on, Mark.
The State Treasurer. What? Well, let's talk about this for a minute. I saw you being referenced in Dr. James Lindsay's work, talking about something called an NAC, a Natural Asset Corporation. I'm just curious, as a Utah State Treasurer, how did this come onto your radar?
Well, so I've been an outspoken critic of environmental, social, and governance. And
ESG.
ESG. And so... some folks that were familiar with my work that were really following natural asset companies more closely than I was, they reached out and just said, hey, you might want to be looking at this. This might be of interest to you. So that's really how it happened.
Great. So ESG, my audience knows all about that. We've been talking about that for a long time now in deep detail. Let's talk about this NAC, Natural Asset Company. What is it? Like, just break that down for us.
Yeah, so the Natural Asset Company is a company that would be traded on the New York Stock Exchange and raise money globally from investors just like any other company. But importantly, it's not based on economic activity. And that's why the New York Stock Exchange had to apply to the Securities and Exchange Commission to get a rule to change its manual and use a different accounting standard than the ones that we use in the United States, basically GAAP. And GAAP is based on economic activity. It's very objective. And the money going in and out of a company, it's fairly easy to track. What makes the Natural Asset Company unique is that these companies are designed to manage ecosystem services and to maximize ecosystem services. So I basically explain it as the financialization of Mother Nature. And so what is photosynthesis worth? And because it's basically creating a value out of thin air, that's why these are not GAAP type of accounting standards that we're looking at. We're now looking at UN, United Nations accounting standards that are applying an arbitrary value to basically natural processes that all of us benefit from.
I want to understand the new way they're assigning value, but let's just talk about the natural processes for a minute. So I think mainly we're talking about sort of like carbon sequestration, right? Pulling carbon out of the air, things like that. But potentially even, I don't know if this includes minerals, water, fossil fuels, et cetera. But what are you talking about, this natural synthesis?
Yeah, so it's really trying to manage, the natural asset company is really trying to segregate the land itself from the natural processes that happen on that land. So things like flood prevention with the way land is contoured or the types of plants that are on the land that prevent soil erosion or floods from happening. It's how much the soil absorbs carbon, how much carbon does the soil absorb? Things like photosynthesis, I mentioned, you know, the converting carbon dioxide into oxygen. It's managing those processes and trying to maximize the good of Mother Nature and applying a value to that. That's really what the natural asset company is trying to do. It's not trying to hold land to hold land, like you and I might think of as a land investment, and turn around and sell it for a higher profit. It's actually trying to manage the natural processes on land in a sustainable way, which means no unsustainable activity can take place on that land, which means things like grazing, mineral extraction, forestry, oil extraction, the things that are happening on federal lands today or on, you know, other private land, if it were to come under the ownership of a natural asset company, the purpose of the land changes from trying to generate economic activity to trying to shut down economic activity.
Mm-hmm. So already we have that, not this, but for example, you mentioned mineral extraction. So in, you know, parts of the country, Texas, for example, someone may own the minerals under the ground. You own the land and you can build something there, but somebody may own the minerals under that. In California, the aquifers, right, the water rights are all kind of divvied up, et cetera. So we sort of have that in a sense, but you still get use of the land. It's just maybe what's under the land is owned. But you're saying with this, it's different, where now they take over the land and every activity that happens either on or under the land as well, basically taking it out of service.
Yes. And so you can take land. So the federal government has all this land in the West, for example. If they put that into or under the management of a natural asset company, then the federal government still owns the land, but it's now managed for a completely different purpose. Same thing with conservation easements. Conservation easements are much more prevalent, I would say, east of the Rockies. But those conservation easements could be enrolled in a natural asset company and further prevent economic activity happening on the land that is encumbered with the conservation easement.
Hmm. So the federal government won't actually sell the land to a private corporation. They basically just give the rights to the private corporation to then control the land over
Correct.
Probably a very long period of time, which is sort of a semi-quasi way of making it private.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Because, you know, this is where you get into constitutional issues with federal land. The BLM, for example, is operating under the 1976 law that essentially allowed them to manage lands, federal lands, for multiple uses. So all of that economic activity. And do they have the right to assign a conservation lease, which essentially takes precedence over the multiple use leases, the grazing and the mineral extraction, et cetera? Do they really have the ability to do that, or is that something that Congress has the right to do? I think that's a constitutional question that certainly is in the fore now.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned BLM in California. We have lots of BLM. In Texas, you have no BLM. It's interesting. But we have lots of national parks that you can't really do anything in. I'm a dirt bike guy, so I kind of follow what happens with the deserts, and we've lost a lot of them in California. Can't go ride dirt bikes out there anymore. But we have lots of national parks that we really can't do anything with, and those are being conserved, and I think I kind of like that. I mean, is it sort of just like that? I mean, they just take the national parks, or you're afraid that this could potentially creep into now taking over a lot more land that could be a big problem?
Yeah, it's definitely the latter, where this is part of a bigger agenda. The America the Beautiful is what the Biden administration calls it. It's basically 30 by 30, the 30 by 30 agenda. So 30% of the land and water in the United States being preserved by 2030, and it has to be basically to the level of a national park or wildlife refuge. And so we're seeing, for example, in Montana, 5.8 million acres, the Missouri Headwaters designation, that the Fish and Wildlife is trying to get this land designated as a wildlife refuge. 5.8 million acres, 500,000 of those acres are state land. They didn't even tell the state of Montana before they announced it. 250,000 acres of private conservation easement land and other private land within this designated area.
I gotta cut you off right there. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Mark Moss Show. I'm sitting down with Marlo Oakes, the Utah State Treasurer, and we are talking about a new type of company called a Natural Asset Corporation that could be going through. We're going to come back and explain to you more in detail exactly what this is, what it means to you, and potentially what we can do about it. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, "The more MQLs, the better," over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show, sitting down with Marlo Oakes, the Utah State Treasurer, and we are talking about a new type of company, a natural asset corporation that the SEC is deciding if they want to allow this new company in. We're talking about sort of what this means and the impacts. And so, Marlo, I had to cut you off abruptly, but you were talking about how potentially, like in Montana, they could be taking over 5 million acres and sort of taking it out of existence or use, I should say. Now, again, when I think about this, maybe from a naive mindset, not understanding that there's a bigger agenda here. From a naive mindset, I would say, well, like I said earlier, well, we already have national parks and we should have those. And I'm a surfer. I like to be in the ocean every day. I want to preserve the environment as well. And I guess we should probably, yeah, have some fish sanctuaries. It sounds like a pretty good idea. But I guess what you're saying is they really want to expand this to be massive. You said 30% of the land in the United States. I don't know what percentage of the land is protected right now. So is
currently it's 12% to the 12%. Level they want it. So only 12% of the land is at the level of protection that would meet the 30 by 30 criteria. So, you know, 18% more. So that's why you're going to see these large land grabs, essentially. And unfortunately for outdoor recreation enthusiasts, you know, you're going to start seeing a reduction in access to the point where it's only the fittest folks who can get into the backcountry, because all other access will be limited. So, I mean, it has a lot of implications for those of us who enjoy the outdoors.
How could this affect Utah? Because I know Utah's got a great, you mentioned backcountry. I get out there in the snow quite a bit. I know Utah has amazing land for mountain biking, dirt biking, hiking, fish, all that. How does it affect Utah potentially?
Yeah, I mean, we have 67% of our state that is owned by the federal government. We've got five national parks, and of course the national parks are highly restricted. You have to have a permit to go in, and a lot of times you're not allowed to go off of the designated roads. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. I've seen where they're trying to limit electric vehicles, whether it's an electric bike that's now considered a mechanized machine, you know, that can't go on certain trails. That's what we're going to see, is a ratcheting down of access on our public lands. But even more troubling to me is the economic impact this will have on our rural communities, where, you know, so much of rural communities produce the basic necessities like agriculture and grazing, mineral extraction, those sorts of things. This is a direct attack on our rural communities and represents a tremendous risk.
Yeah. Now, this is sort of, it sounds like it's sort of what we've seen over the last several years with the carbon credits. And they've been mostly doing this, I think, in other countries like Brazil, for example. Hey, let's save the rainforest. Let's privatize that, and then we'll sell carbon credits onto that. So it's similar to that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely some similarities to that. You could see there's a push, you know, to get companies to report on their scope emissions, scope one, scope two, scope three, you know, carbon emissions. And so this could be a way to drive demand for a natural asset company. If an insurance company, for example, in their investment portfolio, they've invested in fossil fuel companies and have all of these carbon emissions that they have to offset, then, you know, perhaps they buy into a natural asset company that has a certain, you know, carbon offset that they list as an asset. And so that's one way that this could play out.
Yeah. Now, this is sort of, again, I said if I was naive, it sounds like a good idea if I don't really understand the bigger agenda, and I do understand the bigger agenda. And we started talking about this ESG movement, right, this environmental social governance type movement. And maybe I'm being overly optimistic, but it's, like I said, I've been reporting on this for a long time, but it seems like it's been dying. And I know several states, and I don't know if Utah joined in on that. I'm sure you can tell me. You're the treasurer there. But several states pulled their state's pension funds from BlackRock and things like that. I think Florida may have led that movement. I know several other states did that. Something like $6 billion in funds got withdrawn from BlackRock, and then BlackRock started canceling all their ESG funds. Larry Fink doesn't even want to use the word BlackRock, or I'm sorry, ESG anymore. So I thought maybe it was starting to pivot, not just because of the public backlash, but they were shutting down their funds because they weren't profitable. Surprise, surprise. So I thought, maybe I'm being overly optimistic, but I thought it was sort of trending down. Are you thinking that maybe it's not trending down, or maybe they're sort of just changing the name so it doesn't have that negative connotation anymore?
Well, I think this is where it's important to understand what is the agenda behind this. Both ESG and natural asset companies are driven by the climate crisis narrative. But the climate crisis is really a pretext to the bigger agenda, and that is our economic freedoms. So if you look at a UN report from 2018, they commissioned a report, and the headline from that was, "We cannot fight climate change with capitalism." The head of the UN IPCC back in 2015 said, "This is the first time in the history of the world that we have intentionally tried to change the economic system that's been in place in the world." Well, the economic system that's been in place in the world is capitalism. And they later that year in 2015 came out with the Paris Climate Accord. AOC's chief of staff back in 2019 said the Green New Deal wasn't originally about climate. It was about how do you change the economic system. So that's really the end goal. And so ESG and natural asset companies are part of that effort, I believe. And in the case of ESG, I think it's just a matter of changing the language, because if you have that kind of goal, you're not just going to stop when it becomes unpopular to push, three letters.
Yeah, good point. And to your point, yes, it's always been something about something much bigger. And it doesn't just go away. It sort of just reshifts, changes its name, and then sort of comes back. I'm specifically turned off by this idea because of the financialization of it. I mean, we're basically taking public land, taking it away from our use, taking away the economic activity, and then putting it into these private companies, probably BlackRock, et cetera. Tell me about the SEC change. So I think some of this is potentially being hung up in, I think you said the SEC is deciding whether they want to allow a new type of company like this because of the change in accounting that has to happen. And so I'm curious, I want to know more just about that, how they changed that, because like I said, some of these ESG funds were shut down supposedly per BlackRock because they weren't making money. But if they don't have to make money anymore, then I guess they can continue. So I'm curious about that, but I got to take a very quick break. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. I'm sitting down with Marlo Oaks, the Utah State Treasurer. We're talking about these new types of companies, natural asset corporations that the SEC has decided if they want to allow to come in there. And it could be a big assault on our freedoms, not just for us, but for our grandkids, for future generations. We'll be back with more on this in a minute. You don't want to miss it. Don't go away. Be right back.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories. And we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year. Equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
All right, welcome back. If you just tune in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show, and I'm sitting down with Marla Oakes, the Utah State Treasurer. We're talking about these new types of businesses that you need to be aware of. We need to make sure everybody's aware of these. These are natural asset corporations. And so right before the break, I was asking you, again, being the State Treasurer, actually, I didn't get your response to that. I had talked about Florida sort of leading the charge on pulling pension funds away from BlackRock. Did Utah jump in on that?
Yeah, we were actually one of the early ones. I wasn't public about it until later in the year, but in January 2022, we sold all of our BlackRock exposure in the treasurer's office. And we don't use, a lot of the other investment managers for indexing that a lot of other pensions do in our pension plan. So I think we were in a much better shape in Utah overall when this all started.
So let's go back to, again, so BlackRock shut down several of the ESG funds. They said there was poor performance. I've often said that reality will eventually smack these people in the face. Like, it just doesn't work. We invest to make money. These won't make money. And I thought that's sort of what we're seeing. And so it just sort of doesn't work. And also, I don't know, you can correct me, but some of these fund managers, I don't know if they have like a fiduciary duty. I mean, they're supposed to be making money and they're supposed to be doing the best that they can to make the most amount of money. And so intentionally going into something else for other reasons than making money is sort of against that. So that's sort of a lot of complication, and correct me if I'm wrong on that, but then maybe
you're absolutely right. and in fact, I wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal in May of last year. That was saying this is the biggest breach of fiduciary duty in the history of our country.
And I mean, even other companies that are also doing things in the name of ESG or DEI that are hurting their business, like a Budweiser move or a Disney or a Target. I mean, that's a breach of fiduciary duty as well, wouldn't it be?
Yes, absolutely. And think about our free market capitalist system. Our free market system really encapsulates our personal freedoms and our constitutional liberties. We as individuals have the right to choose how we spend our money and how we make our money. And so this ESG movement is completely the opposite, where we have top-down dictates what companies need to do. Like the Biden administration saying, hey, you need to produce electric vehicles. Telling the marketplace what to do. I mean, this is totally counter to our economic system that is supposed to be based on consumer demand and companies meeting that demand, not being dictated to by outside forces, including the UN or global investors saying, hey, you need to do this or we're not going to invest with you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you talk about the EV vehicles as well. And I mean, Ford took a $4.6 billion bath on that this last year. And I saw it look like Ford and GM were both closing down plans of creating these new plants that they were going to do. So again, reality smacking them in the face. They're losing money. There's no consumer demand. They can dictate top down, but they can't really drive the market at the end of the day.
That's right. And so the concern is that the market is being captured. So with ESG, you have these organizations like Net Zero Climate Pledges, and they span the financial services industry. So banks have signed on to the Banking Net Zero Alliance, asset managers have signed on to the Asset Managers Net Zero Alliance, insurance companies, et cetera. And when they do that, and they all adopt an agenda and say, hey, we're going to cut down on our fossil fuel exposure, you no longer have a free market, because that captures the marketplace. And that's the danger.
Right. Yeah, it sort of monopolizes it, if you will, right? So in a sense, in a different way, but to your point, It sort of takes away our options or our choices to make.
That's right.
Now, instead of this whole free market, hey, we give you two choices. Which one do you choose? Kind of a thing.
That's right. Because, you know, typically in a free market system, if a bank decides I'm going to lend money or I'm not going to lend money to a certain industry, another bank will lend money to that industry because they can make money at it. That's the way a free market works. When you have opportunities to make money, companies form and they move into that space and exploit that opportunity, and it becomes a net positive for society. When you have agendas that cut off capital to certain segments, you no longer have a free market.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, I read a book by Mark Carney, previously the head of Bank of Canada and the Bank of England and, you know, advisor for the UN and the WEF and et cetera. Mark Carney's someone you should pay attention to. And he said that these businesses that don't go along with this will be, quote, economic roadkill.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
They are threatened. They may lose business. They may go out of business. And I mean, that's the threat. Or they have their boards of directors swapped out if they're not sufficiently committed to the agenda. They do that through the annual proxy vote. I mean, it's very serious.
Yeah. So then sort of back to this, the fiduciary duty sort of angle, then a CEO or whatever, the board, a company that specifically, purposely goes into something knowing that it's going to underperform, knowing that it's going to hurt the performance of the stock or the market cap or the business, would then be breaching that duty. So specifically doing what, you know, again, Target, Disney, et cetera, has done could potentially be against that. And again, back to BlackRock saying they're shutting down their ESG funds because of poor performance. But let's get back to this accounting change. So if the accounting changes and these businesses no longer have to produce a profit, or they change the way they produce a profit. So explain to me what that accounting change will do. And does that sort of affect or protect them against making these decisions?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I'm not sure I fully know the answer to that. But essentially, you're taking non-economic activity, assigning an economic value to that, and passing it off as something that investors can rely on. That's the recipe for fraud. And the fact that the New York Stock Exchange is promoting this idea, frankly, I think introduces reputational risk for them. You're now looking at introducing an accounting system whose values are based on some arbitrary number that nobody could justify, no matter how hard you try, because these are things like photosynthesis and other natural processes that are just part of the world in which we live and we all benefit from, and they're all necessary and they all have tremendous value, but you can't place a value on it. It's totally arbitrary.
Right.
And so that's the fundamental problem. And it remains to be seen, you know, how this will play out. But what's happened in places like in Europe is that they're taking those values, the countries are taking those values and us putting them on their balance sheet. And so in the United States, actually back in January of 2023, the natural capital account or national capital, I think it's natural capital account. There was a publication from the White House talking about using those values, the value of nature in the United States, placing it on the balance sheet of the United States, and that would essentially give us more room to borrow more money and create more financial problems. I mean, it is crazy.
Is this something that the Biden administration has been sort of either maybe specifically involved in or not? I mean, is this something from the administration that we're seeing pop up?
Yes. Yeah, because like the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, they're trying to or they look at different rules and what's the impact on ecological services, and really trying to embed this concept across the government. And so it really is kind of this whole of government approach, similar to what they've said with climate change, that they have to use a whole of government approach.
I got to cut you off on that, but I want to dig back into that.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. I got to take a very, very quick break, but I'm going to be right back in a minute. You don't want to miss it. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
All right. The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
All right, welcome back. If you just tune in, you are listening to The Mark Moss Show. And I'm sitting down with Marlo Oaks, the Utah State Treasurer. We're talking about these natural asset corporations. I had to cut you off abruptly there, Marlo. You were talking about the New York Stock Exchange and the JP Morgan, I think you were saying family.
The Intrinsic Exchange Group. Yeah, so the Intrinsic Exchange Group is really the group that came up with natural asset companies, that concept. And they were funded by Rockefeller Foundation, among other entities. And so the whole idea that they put forward is that we are not investing enough to address climate change and biodiversity erosion. So they targeted the number, they put forward the number of $5.6 trillion of underinvestment annually to address climate change and biodiversity erosion. Yeah. And that the natural asset company is the mechanism that they plan to use to make up that difference. Well, if you take that $5.6 trillion annually, that's 25% of GDP, that's $68,000 for every family of four. That's either a tax or some other net drain on economic activity, because again, a natural asset company is not backed by economic activity. It's simply assigning a value to Mother Nature processes that we all take for granted and all benefit from, what some would call positive externalities. As soon as you assign a value to a positive externality or a process like this, then there is somebody who owns that. And that can then be used to charge others who use the benefit of that process. And so instead of being a positive externality, it has now been commoditized and financialized. And that's what we're talking about. It is literally, we're going down the path of monetizing the air that we breathe.
Scary, scary stuff. I want to switch gears, but before we do, let me ask you just one last question. So people listen to this, they're scared of this, they don't like it, they don't want this future. What do we do?
That's a great question. It's a really important question. We were able to get an extension from the Securities and Exchange Commission to open comments again. So when an agency like this puts forward a rule, they open up a comment period for the public to make comments, either for or against. And so people can go to the Securities and Exchange Commission website and submit comments and let the commission know that this is a terrible idea and provide arguments against this. They can also, and very importantly, reach out to their congressional representatives. And it's very important that the Financial Services Committee members in Congress hear from us and ask them to initiate oversight hearings on this. People can call the New York Stock Exchange and ask them to withdraw the application. And so there's definitely things that people can do and certainly have your voice heard. in the marketplace and alert other people to what's going on. We have a very short fuse before that comment period closes, basically a week. And so we really appreciate the focus on this.
Yeah, so we're going to make sure we include links to that down in the show notes here so we can call the SEC, write them, comment on that, New York Stock Exchange, and your lawmakers. Let's switch gears for a minute. We got about 5 minutes left here. So I have you, the treasurer, Marla Oaks, the Utah State Treasurer. So I'm curious your take on this. This week, we saw massive news in my world, and that is that Wall Street has now adopted a Bitcoin ETF. So we have an asset that's the best performing asset in history. It's 15 years old now. It's not 5,000 years old like gold, but 15 years is not a small feat. It's beat most companies. Like I said, it's the best performing asset, and now it's officially an ETF. From a treasurer standpoint, what's your take on that?
Was that approved? Did the SEC then approve that?
Yeah, it's approved. They're open. They're trading right now.
Okay, I guess I'm a little 11. Behind.
11 went through.
Wow.
11 ETFs.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. No, I think it's great. I mean, to the extent that you know that this provides greater economic freedom, I'm all for that. I think we see things like a central bank digital currency. That's another whole nother area that,
But I'm curious on your take on Bitcoin as the asset now that it's being an ETF as a treasurer. So for example, you know, 15 years now I'm in the Bitcoin space. Lots of people I know live on Bitcoin as their unit of account. We have companies like Michael Saylor with MicroStrategy who've now adopted it as their sort of, unit of account as well. Michael Saylor's bet is working out very well for him. Now he's up, $4 billion or whatever it is. We have countries like El Salvador that have adopted it. And so I'm just curious, as a state treasurer, you're directing sort of that treasury. Is it even on your radar now that it's an ETF? Obviously, it could make it easier for you. Or is it something that you're not even really thinking about or looking at?
No, I am. I'm definitely, it's definitely on the radar. I think of it in the context of a central bank digital currency and protecting economic freedom, certainly from an individual perspective. But it's another way of potentially protecting oneself from the centralized power associated with a central bank digital currency. From a investment perspective, I think it's a very interesting concept. It seems to have both inflationary and deflationary hedging characteristics. It's definitely on my radar and something that I'm interested in keeping track of, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one more piece that Wall Street's trying to financialize. They want to get their fangs into everything, if you will. But I put something up earlier today, and it's sort of a lot of people are saying it's sort of like this. We hopefully think it could be sort of this Trojan horse, if you will, right? Where it's like, as of right now, for whatever we can see into the future, there's really no way to get a hold of it. Owning more Bitcoin doesn't give you any more control over the network. You can have, like Michael Saylor, whatever, 150,000 Bitcoin, or you could have a fraction of one, and it doesn't give you any more control over the network. And so no matter how much Wall Street buys, it doesn't really give them an advantage. They could obviously use it to manipulate and suppress the price. They could certainly do that, but not the network itself. And so to your point, yes, certainly it's probably the greatest tool that we have as of right now for individual freedom. I kind of believe that without the freedom to transact, we don't really have any freedoms. Right?
That's exactly what I tell people. If we do not have economic freedom, we don't have any other freedoms.
Exactly. And so the ability to transact without a middleman peer-to-peer in the digital age is really big. And the ability to hold my savings in a way that can't be debased is really big. And unfortunately, we just look at the trend do we have more money printing ahead in the future or less?
Yeah.
And do we have more authoritarianism in the future or less?
The one thing that gives me pause is the attack on energy. And are we going to see, when power goes down, what happens to Bitcoin? But I just don't know. There's so many crazy things going on in the world. It's hard to know, you know, and so that's why I think it's important for people to be diversified overall, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Like I said, I was just curious from a treasurer standpoint, just because, like I said, I know now businesses, they changed the accounting rule now, the FTSB. So now it changes the way that you can hold Bitcoin or you can account for it on your books. That was a really big deal that went through about a month ago. And now with the ETF. And so I'm sure there's lots of other treasury managers, at least in public and private corporations, that saw what Michael Saylor did and made billions of dollars. And they're probably thinking about it as well. So I was just curious about it.
And is it considered, it's not considered a security, correct?
No, it's not. It's not a security. It's a commodity. It's the only cryptocurrency that's a commodity. Right?
Okay. Yeah. Cause that's
there's no common issuer. No one issues it.
Right.
Anyway, that's what we got. We're sort of out of time here. I really appreciate you taking the time. This is a very important subject. Like I said, we're going to make sure to put in the show notes down below ways that you can get in touch with the SEC for comments and things like that. Marlo Oaks, the Utah State Treasurer, anything else that you want to say in closing?
No, I really appreciate the attention to this. It's critical that people act and they act quickly and take the steps that we outlined and let their voices be heard. I think we are making a significant difference.
All right. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.